Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of Wrestlingomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting live and on demand from Buffalo, New York, where today is Sunday, December 4th, 2022. And today on the program, we have the WWE co-CEOs talk at the Wells Fargo Technology, Media, and Telecom Conference, the Summit. We'll go over, we talked about some of it on Thursday, but we'll talk about some more of it in depth, and especially in relation to Morgan Stanley's research, where they experiment with the idea of how does Fox value SmackDown, which I think could be extrapolated onto some other wrestling properties as well. I think that's most of what we're going to talk about today. But first, we have to lead here with the big news that came down on Thursday. Bills versus Patriots, live on Amazon. Also available on local broadcasters in those respective hometown regions. 24-10. I believe one of the Boston's newspapers called this a steamrolling of the Patriots by the Bills. Wow, the Patriots are only 6-6 now. That's unfortunate. Bills, though, moved to 9-3. Great job by the Bills. Great job by the crossbar blocking that field goal. there's an image for people watching on YouTube. Here's an image of Josh Allen celebrating. Here's an image of Bill Belichick wearing what can only be described as a raincoat. What would you call this?
A Darth Vader cape.
Here's Bill Belichick. Bill Belichick looked very cold throughout the night. A lot of sympathy for Bill Belichick. I feel bad for him. Somebody needs to hug him and warm him up, I think. He did not look like a happy camper here. Here he is, reluctantly congratulating Sean McDermott.
He's wearing a lot of different outfits in these photos. He's putting on a lot of different layers and shedding a lot of different layers. He's
putting on a warm weather fashion show, I think. I think that's a pivot opportunity for him is that maybe, you know, he's so known for the hoodie. Am I wrong? He's known for the hoodie. I think he could come up with his own line of warm cut off gear. Yeah.
So I think he's scaled back hoodie usage over the years. If you see him in the hoodie now, it's kind of like a rare opportunity. It's like, oh, it's like when you wear a throwback uniform.
Yes. I will say this. I will give Patriot fans credit. They try to find positives in everything. Later that night on Twitter, I saw a bunch of Patriot fans going, hey, Tom Brady can come back next year to finish his career. And it's like they just spin it into something positive. They're like, yeah. They were starting the rumor that Tom Brady might come back next year.
But there's heat between Belichick and Brady, right?
No, they met for 20 minutes when Brady came back to New England last year.
For 20 minutes. Story. They just stare at each other.
Yes.
Because the whole point of Brady going to Tampa, he wants to prove that he can do it without Belichick.
And he
Belichick.
Did.
It was him. What did he? Yeah. He went to the Super Bowl and he lost, right?
No, he won.
He won the Super Bowl.
He won a Super Bowl. Yeah. That's not fair. I'm sure I complained about it on Twitter at the time. I just don't remember. but if you want to participate today and you want to put in a question or a comment and have us read it and respond to it, feel free to submit a super chat if you're watching today live on YouTube, which you can watch every Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern every Sunday. I realized this past week that Christmas Day and New Year's Day are both Sundays, so I think we'll be doing some sort of pre-prepared program for those days, at least Christmas Day. I do not expect Chris Gull and Jesse Collins to spend Christmas morning with me at 11 a.m. Eastern.
You want to do a Christmas special?
Do you have any ideas? What would a Christmas special consist of?
Us wearing Santa hats.
I'm already in the holiday spirit.
Yeah, Gullo's already there. He's doing this outside his house, which you can see decorated.
Yes. He's on yes. He's across the street, I think. He's on his neighbor's lawn.
It's still dark there, too.
He's in a different time zone. Yes. Though, yes. Yes. Speaking of Christmas specials, maybe we could invite jolly old St. Nick on the program and things of that nature. But anyway, should we – I guess we'll get started here. The Wells Fargo talk – we have to go through these Bills pictures again. The Wells Fargo talk, which was on Wednesday. We talked a little bit about it on Thursday, but I want to touch on the international promotion talk and the TV rights valuation stuff. So let's just go right to Stephanie's comments, where she's being asked a question by Stephen Cahal, perhaps the only equity analyst who is I don't know about that at this point, but who has long said that W is overpriced as a stock. And here's that interaction.
And Stephanie, I think on the call you also mentioned some tuck-in acquisitions. Can you give us a little more color on how you're thinking about those for WWE?
Absolutely. So whether that's, just to give some examples of what I meant by that, it has to align with our core capabilities, right? So whether that's smaller wrestling promotions, say, internationally, or it's another bigger opportunity around a business that is, kind of all over the place, akin to boxing, right? What are the, who's the lineal champion? Who's the WBC champion? Who's the this? It's all over the place. And that's where professional wrestling was some 40 years ago. And my father, Vince McMahon, who was the chairman and CEO, obviously had the opportunity to roll up all of those different territories and create one major brand in WWE that has now gone from a regional territorial, content play to a global media franchise. And how can we then replicate that in other areas with boxing being an idea of one of them?
So she's talking about boxing there quite a bit. I mean, the part where we're going to focus on probably mostly here is really only that first sentence or so that she says about perhaps smaller international promotions. But there's more talk in here that we're not going to listen to today about boxing from Nick Khan too. Even horse racing, which I'm conflicted about whether Nick Khan was just using horse racing as an example of a sport that was more popular decades ago or whether they have realistic interest in horse racing. But definitely they have interest in boxing. With Stephanie making the point that, hey, look, boxing, you don't know who the champion is, and boxers aren't as big of stars as they used to be, and there's titles all over the place. Maybe they could do something about AEW in that regard, probably not. But there's a lot of different boxing titles, and maybe they could roll them all up, maybe. I imagine that this makes sense, and maybe there's connections in the Nick Khan management team with various boxers and things like that. So there's nothing else to add on that. We'll jump right into what wrestling promotions could she possibly have been talking about. GCW, we know apparently Stephanie McMahon and Brett Lauderdale are friends. I did look, WWE did acquire Evolve in 2020, that there's, you could find reporting on that in 2020 from PW Insider. They apparently don't own Progress. They apparently don't own WXW, but they apparently have relationships with those two companies in the UK and in Germany. GCW, you could say, is an international company. They just went to Japan and Mexico.
And the UK?
Lucha. And the UK.
I think they're going to Australia too.
Are they?
Eventually, yeah.
Yeah.
What I found interesting about these comments, both from Stephanie and from Nick Khan that you went over, is they seem kind of against what Nick Khan has hinted at as far as kind of what he views the WWE business model as, which is focusing mainly on WWE as an entity and television rights and getting paid for producing that content, not really investing in other aspects of business. And like looking to expand, like the idea of like NXT, you know, NXT India, NXT Japan, NXT Latin America, NXT Middle East, like that whole concept seems totally against what Nick Khan would be about, which is just, you know, investing and spending all this money on these things with no guaranteed return, with the idea of increasing WWE's international footprint in markets that are already pretty domestically saturated, as opposed to expanding into new markets, which I could see as more likely expanding into India and China if you can. It just seems like this is not what Nick Khan talks about during the investor calls, which is very much focused on how can we get paid for the content that we're producing? How can we get paid for the things that we're already doing? And how can we leverage that to get more money from our media partners? And it seems kind of like the opposite of that, which would be let's spend money not only purchasing or another wrestling company in another country, but like running that wrestling company and trying to grow WWE's brand, but using another wrestling company as a launching point. It just doesn't seem to me at least, doesn't seem to make sense with the way that Nick Khan has kind of run WWE and the way he's discussed it about it in other capacities.
I think so this all goes back to the 2018 Business Partner Summit, which was WrestleMania weekend that year, where Triple H comes out on the stage and stands in front of a map of the world, and there's NXT logos on different continents in the world, and that they're going to do global localization, which Stephanie McMahon made into a portmanteau on this talk, calling it glocal. So I guess it just depends. So there's no clarity here about what regions they have in mind. I would like to experiment with Japan and Mexico think about what companies they're talking about. I guess they would want, you know, I think they see India as an opportunity. Maybe they see China. It's not really strong wrestling presence in those countries, though. But I think this is sort of a result of who's returned to power here. And I think, you know, Triple H was minimized in this company, and he had his health issues, and it's hard to parse what lack of influence that Triple H had for a while was because of maybe actual political maneuvering, or maybe losing favor with Vince, or and what was just related to his heart problems. It's hard for me to know, like, well, what really was purely Nick's vision, and what was him, you know, doing mainly what Vince wanted, and he's out of the picture now. I did get the sense, or I guess I will speculate, that what Stephanie mentions there in the brief segment that she does about international wrestling companies, I think it's important to note that she mentions that Nick does not, and I my feeling is that it's very much a Triple H idea.
Can I take a Nick Khan spin on it, if you will? Like, so let me ask you this. And I think you've mentioned that the WWE TV deal in Japan is not great.
Probably there is no WWE TV deal. I think they're on Samurai TV. They used to be on DAZN, but okay. I think they have, in essence, they have very little TV presence in Japan.
And I don't know their deal in Mexico, but I'm assuming that CMLL Fox, and AAA
Fox
have a better deal.
I think they have okay. Latin America, including Mexico.
But probably not as good as the deals that AAA has and CMLL has. And for example, that in Japan, like, we don't really know those numbers, but that could be a factor, you know, to get better TV in those areas.
how much media revenue is AAA and CMLL, are AAA and CMLL generating? I don't know.
There's also, so what is WWE's business model? How does WWE make money right now?
Media, video,
right?
And to a very small extent, ticket sales,
right? Big deals with and NBC products. Universal and Fox and this Kingdom of Saudi Arabia for putting on events, Peacock deal, all that stuff like that. While Japan is a country with a large wrestling fan base and a long history of professional wrestling, that is not how New Japan Pro Wrestling or any other Japanese pro wrestling company makes money. They don't make money based off of having big TV deals in Japan. They make it off of live events, attendance, and merchandise. And so that would be, this again would be something like WWE can, even if they were, say, let's say WWE buys all Japan Pro Wrestling and spends a lot of money and maybe signs some big Japanese names. Maybe they ship some big Japanese names that they own back to Japan for special shows and things like that. Let's just say hypothetically they do that. Even if they were to bring business in all Japan up a significant margin, they're still not really making the kind of revenue that they maybe that they would even come close to in the United States. Mm-hmm. They're not going to get paid for television there unless they have some sort of just meteoric rise. And so it doesn't really fit. I'm not as knowledgeable about the Mexican television deals, but I assume Mexican companies are still making a majority of their revenue off of live attendance. It's very different business model. Even the big companies like New Japan are not raking it in off of media rights. And so that is another factor that makes me question, like, why would they want to get involved there? I could see it in a country like India, where their Indian, the WWE main roster's, you know, media deal in India is fairly lucrative. I think it's their second biggest, right?
Yes.
So that makes some
50, just to throw some numbers, $50 million average annual value is what I believe their deal is in India.
So that makes more sense. But to purchase a Japanese company during, by the way, a terrible time to get into the Japanese pro wrestling market. It's ice cold coming out of the pandemic, and there's some other factors that go involved that are involved with that. It doesn't seem to make any sense with their business model to get more involved in this. And the whole look, they can't even make NXT in the United States profitable. So we're going to go to investors and we're going to talk about, oh, we're going to spend all this money opening up regional NXT hubs where we can't even get the United States one to in the black. And now we're going to have all in these other countries that are going to be much more difficult to turn revenue around. For what? To expand into those companies, it's going to take forever to build up the NXT version of your company to even surpass the main roster's appeal in those countries. It just seems like a waste of money in a money pit, and it would be something that WWE wouldn't want to do and something that would not excite me if I was an investor.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point to raise, that it's WWE making money off of media, which is the vast majority of their revenue. And maybe we're just, maybe I'm just going down the wrong road here in terms of thinking about Japan and Mexico. But yeah, these are largely live event driven businesses. At least I'm sure Japan is, and I would expect Mexico is too.
I brought up Europe on Thursday because they're doing NXT Europe. Maybe they're just trying to gobble up all those promotions there to do that, like WXW and others.
And so they closed NXT UK and just announced NXT Europe. And then since then, have we gotten any information on NXT Europe?
Nothing.
And Dave Meltzer, at least when they closed NXT UK, he said in kind of very typical Dave speak that like NXT Europe is like one of these things that like is being talked about, but I'll believe it exists when it happens.
Yeah, I don't expect it to happen until late next year, if that.
Yeah. So, I mean, if this is Triple H's ambition, it would be a good example of how much power he has in the company to want to get that started. If you were an invest, like, can you, Brandon, you're an expert at playing devil's advocate. Can you sell, I'm an investor, sell me on the idea of all of these NXT hubs. why should I be excited that WWE is going to spend a lot of money starting up all of these NXT hubs?
I guess because you think that a lot of these regions around the world that don't have particularly strong economies today, as you know, compared to the US or even the UK, a lot of them are growing their economies. The median income in these regions is growing and is expected to grow for decades, in the decades to come. And particularly countries like, and we're not talking about Japan or Mexico in this case, but particularly countries like India and China, they have massive populations, and that's why India's TV rights fees are relatively high already. And that if you can grow an audience in these regions, you can continue to extract media value and eventually run live events, and you can run more live events if you have robust brands in all these markets, and with that comes the rest of your business, including consumer products, and maybe other media deals that you can make in addition to that. Mm-hmm. Does that sound good?
So you're talking about getting invested in emerging economies, not necessarily Mexico and certainly not Japan, but India, Indonesia, perhaps China, perhaps like the Philippines or Pakistan or some countries in Africa or South America. Yeah. When do we see a serious revenue turnaround on that from specifically these NXT workshops? The India is a good example of like India is now a profitable market for WWE in a few different ways, right? We know the television deal is very profitable in India.
Yeah.
Perhaps whatever they're making off of, you know, social media, which we know is relatively negligible, but is also supported by, you know, the Indian market, and they can say in investors calls how many, you know, views something got on one of their social media platforms that is largely coming from an Indian fan base. Do they have TikTok in India?
I would imagine. But like, so in India, so on YouTube, huge percentage, I don't know, at Barrio said at one point, so this is years ago, I think says something to the effect, I don't know if he's talking about international or maybe most of it's from India, but a huge percentage, we can say, of the YouTube engagement that W gets is from India. Now, the CPMs on that are very low. Mm-hmm. The money that you're making on YouTube overall is not big relative to your big TV deals. I think it's like $20 to $30 million a year. Compare that to your TV deals in the US, $470 million. The TV deal in India, $50 million. YouTube, 20 to 30 million, I'd say. And then the money that you're generating just off of your viewers in India is low because the economy is not as strong in India as it is in other countries.
Right. But if we accept that India has proven to be a successful market that WWE has really broken into over the last, decade or so, that was done through the main roster, that was due through like the Great Khali being a celebrity and being a legitimate drawing card to the Indian audience. That was done through getting other talent that maybe even if they're not of Indian descent are over in India. It was getting over the main roster in India. It wasn't starting a promotion in India like TNA tried to do. It wasn't, catering to specifically necessarily the Indian market with things beyond, the Great Khali, and to a very lesser extent, Jinder Mahal. It was WWE breaking into it using their main roster and doing that. You don't necessarily need to start your own NXT and have all this, domestic talent coming from those regions and having your own wrestling company there. That sounds much, much more expensive. And your return is not going to be, I don't think, going to really justify that when you've already shown at least the ability to break into India and turn a profit off India. And how many markets are there really like India? I know it's one of the poorest markets, but it's also like 1.2 billion people.
Which they've tried, and I don't know that they even still have that PPTV deal that they at one time had.
And they've kicked the tires on a lot so far. Just if we're actually going to go down the route of let's train talent, let's get talent from these regions. They've been doing that in India and China for probably a half dozen years. And what are the results that we have had from, we have Xia Li and Veer and a lot of people who tried it out and went home.
Yeah. A lot of NXT releases from those areas.
Yeah.
Kavita Devi is another one.
She was the weightlifter who did like the big YouTube number for her super, the Mae Young Classic match. Not around anymore. So even if we're talking about like a follow-up question would be if we're okay, we're going to go to these NXTs or we're just going to find, you know, talent and we're going to bring them to the Performance Center Orlando and we're going to develop them. Again, the question that needs to be asked about everyone, about any time the Performance Center comes up as a potential like big investment strategy for WWE is what is your track record at this point of developing real top talent that's making a difference in business? And it's not very good. And it's certainly not very good for the domestic, for the international talent that they've brought in. So why do I have confidence if you can't train Indian talent coming to Florida and working with presumably experienced talent and working with your best trainers, why do I think you're going to be able to train Indian talent in India and will presumably be a more difficult setting for talent to learn wrestling?
I think, and maybe part of what we should be thinking about is Kali has a promotion in India, CWE. I'm trying to
remember. Does he still run? Does he run? Because I know he's done like special shows that have drawn really big crowds. I don't
know
if they were.
Check the cage match as we talk here.
See that's what I'm doing.
What events they've done recently. Middle Kingdom Wrestling is a Chinese-based promotion.
I don't think they've ran it a while, though.
Okay.
Before, since the pandemic. I mean, I'll double-check that, but.
I wonder if some of this could be justified as just being defensive. I can imagine them looking at the rise and the, you know, the resurgence of New Japan, which isn't doing incredibly well now, and Japan is still under restrictions related to the pandemic. But New Japan definitely had growth and had a rise in popularity domestically and then eventually internationally, peaking in 2019. And I could see WWE looking at that and saying, well, why weren't we a part of that? Or why couldn't, like, if they were able to grow their audience and to grow their business with a wrestling product, why were they able to do it and not us? Why weren't we able to make WWE more popular in Japan over that time? And WWE, there have been a lot of products that have emerged over the last several years that have risen in popularity and have grown their businesses and for various reasons. And I wonder if part of it is defensive to say, let's get in there and make that be us rather than somebody apart from us. I was talking to Cubs fan asking him about Lucha, because, you know, he is like the foremost English speaking expert on Lucha, I would say, who I know of. And he raised the question, you know, what does WWE need from an existing international company that they can't get themselves? In other words, assume that they're going to do this. They want to do this. Go buy companies internationally. What do they really get by buying that company that they can't relatively easily make happen themselves? My answer to that was that maybe I could see it being really hard to go to particularly Japan or Mexico and launch an NXT Japan, NXT Mexico, WWE Japan, WWE Mexico. And sure, you can recruit talent, you can recruit personnel who have experience in that region and have name recognition in that region and can draw in that region. But I think it would be really hard to connect authentically with the local market if you don't have one of the existing brands that have brand equity in those markets. And maybe in Japan in particular, there's a difference in the culture that people always talk about in terms of talent and personnel having a great deal of loyalty to their company, where like maybe it is harder to recruit in Japan and it would be easier if you just acquired a company. So you're acquiring the loyalty that comes with it. All of that said, I think a lot of this is hard to read because it largely depends, assuming that Paul Levesque is behind this vision, which I think is a safe assumption. All this kind of depends on what is his vision and understanding about pro wrestling internationally. Whereas this is somebody who, you know, apparently just started to take independent wrestling seriously in about 2014. So I think it's pretty curious what exactly they have in mind here.
Kali's promotion does still exist, and it seems like they run pretty frequently.
Yeah.
Running in the same spot. I have no idea. if it has television. I have no idea if it has a lot of fans attending, but it does exist and still seems to be running based using, you know, domestic talent, peers.
Middle Kingdom has ran three shows in Halloween weekend, but then they, before that it was January. So they're running very sparse in China. I wanted to kind of bring up a point what you were saying, Brandon. You're an outsider, honestly, yes. And WWE is a global company, but you're an American outsider company. If you come over and purchase a company that has a lot of history and tradition, I don't think that that local audience will see that as a great thing. Like, it's like, oh, you're coming and taking something from us and putting your spin on it. Now, if you just, hey, we're opening WWE Mexico, that's different. But I think if you purchase CMLL, then it's like you're taking something away from us and turning it, Americanizing it.
I think it can be done somewhat along the lines of, and I know Bushiroad's not a wrestling company inherently, and Cyber Agent's not a wrestling company inherently, but those larger companies have acquired New Japan, Stardom, Noah, DDT, Tokyo Joshi Pro, and those companies have I think it's safe to say, preserved their identities.
What if Michael Cole explained the history of CMLL on a broadcast, though?
Wouldn't that
put people at ease if he starts talking about Salvador Lutaroff?
Yes.
But Bushiroad and Cyber Agent are companies based in Japan, though, right? Like, I still think it's, yeah.
I'm not an expert on this, but there is, I believe, like, I think there's, like, federal regulations in Japan that make it very difficult for an American company to purchase a Japanese company or for any, you know, foreign company to purchase a Japanese company, which might be difficult if we're talking about one of these larger promotions, perhaps with the smaller ones or, you know, it's not significant enough to kind of trigger anything. But I believe there are, it's hard for an American, a big American company to come in and purchase Japanese companies outright.
Yeah, MJ from NJ brought that up in the chat. There has to be like regulatory approval to gain business in markets like that.
Okay. Well, for the sake of exercise, nothing else. This is what we see on the screen here is a brief survey of the state of Japanese wrestling, the major companies. Bushiroad owns New Japan and Stardom. Cyber Agent owns Noah, DDT, Tokyo Joshi Pro. I think they own some another smaller company. All Japan Pro Wrestling, I believe, is independently owned. Ice Ribbon, I believe, is independently owned. It brings to mind, too, I think they would want to, if this is an idea that's really being had, if they want to get into Japan, I would see them not only wanting one men's promotion or not only wanting one women's promotion. I think they would want to be involved with women's wrestling as well as men's wrestling. Anyway, Dragon Gate, I believe, is independently owned. Maybe Gore owns some of it. I don't know. And, of course, Big Japan. We look forward to a WWE-owned deathmatch company.
Well, it would be WWE. It wouldn't be Big Japan. It would be like, you know, them using, like, replace all the stuff with just, you know, Singapore chain, like Singapore cane shots and those black metal chairs.
And here's the top 20 promotions that I extracted from Cage Match in terms of these are the promotions that run the most events year to date, 2022. Dragon Gate is number one. Almost 150 events on the year. Kalega, which is a promotion that I hear people joking about.
Kalega, hey, Kalega's probably for sale if WWE wants to make a play. I think they're more likely
a really small company, right?
They, yeah. So I think they run all of their shows out of Osaka, like a small, like little studio. And each show, like, I think they have YouTube shows, and I think they're like maybe like three matches long. So I don't know if these are really separate live events that they're running as much as...
I first did this by number of matches that each company had held, and Kalega, yeah, I think, was number one.
Yeah. So I don't know if there's... Yeah, but I don't know if these are all separate. Those are necessarily what I would call separate events. I assume that they're taping a lot of them at one time and then releasing them intermittently through these short YouTube shows. But okay. I'm sure if WWE's interested, they want to get... Look, one of the most prolific companies in Japan is Kalega. I'm sure. I don't know who owns. Let me see if someone funny might own Kalega. I'm gonna look that up now.
You research that, and I'll.
Yeah,
we've got your Kalega coverage here in WrestleNomics. New Japan is number three. Cage Match uses this category freelance shows to sort of throw in miscellaneous one-offs, and then Big Japan number six is DDT. Number seven is Stardom. Ice Ribbon, Gato Move, which is a sort of niche Joshi company, right? Michinoku Pro, Pro Wrestling Noah, and then now we get into some companies that I don't really, I'm not familiar with. Active Advanced Pro Wrestling, All Japan, Tokyo Joshi Pro 01, Pure J, Pro Wrestling Wave, Sportiva Entertainment, never heard of it, YMZ Pro Wrestling, and of course, Yanagase Pro Wrestling, everyone's favorite. So there's those things. I did do the Google Trends in the Japan region to look at. I think this is a good representation of name recognition. This is year to date, January to November. Yesterday was the third. So yes, the Google Trends data is available for the full month of November.
If they were to do this, doesn't All Japan make the most sense?
I guess. Yeah, I guess Dragon Gate makes sense though too. Yeah. And Ice Ribbon making some sense. Yeah, we should mention too. I think those companies that are owned by large parents, besides the legal issues that may be a big hurdle, I think those New Japan, Stardom, Noah, DDT, Tokyo Joshi Pro would be pretty hard to acquire unless those parents were looking to offload, which is not inconceivable given that maybe we're on the verge of some larger economic problem throughout the world. In terms of name recognition, let's look at perhaps Google Trends will give us some suggestion about this. New Japan, of course, is way ahead, followed by Stardom, which is at about half the rate, followed by WWE. So WWE number three in terms of web search in Japan, behind New Japan and Stardom. Just behind WWE is Noah, followed by Dragon Gate, followed by All Japan, followed by DDT, followed by AEW. Followed by Big Japan, and then we have a lot of others with, I think, too small a measurement to really try to analyze here. So that's Japan. I think we have Mexico next. With AAA, who have a partnership with Marvel. Marvel, yep. That'll perk your ears up. CMLL and IWRG, who's running the most events? CMLL. This is big news, too. I have scraped the LuchaDB database. Are you guys familiar with the LuchaDB? LuchaDB.com, which is Cubs fans' database of Lucha results, going all the way back to 1930. You ever visited it? You should all visit LuchaDB.com. So CMLL is the leader year-to-date in terms of number of events, 331. This includes some scheduled events for December, too. 240. For AAA, and then IWRG is number three, and then we have a lot of companies that I'm just not familiar with here. After that, and in terms of web search in Mexico for wrestling companies, WWE is by far number one. Is how it measures, at a 9 to CMLL's 1.3 to AAA's 0.9, let's say, to round.
So. Is the Crash Lucha Libre, is that considered an independent then? Because that's a pretty prominent Mexican promotion. Mm-hmm. And I think Conan had ties to it. I would definitely kind of put them in the conversation, not as obviously as AAA and CMLL, but, the Crash is, I think, a pretty notable Mexican promotion.
Mm-hmm. I ran the table on number of events on cage match also, and the Crash was, I think, in the neighborhood of like 80 events on the year or something like that. They were comparable to others in terms of number of events, but they were not right up at the top.
So WWE, they have obviously a big lead in Google Trends search over even the Mexican promotions when it comes to domestic.
I'm not sure what to make search of there.
WWE doesn't. So let's say WWE is very popular in Mexico, but WWE doesn't really run all that much in Mexico, despite the fact that it would be not incredibly difficult for them to run shows in Mexico, Mexico City. I'm just looking at, they ran a show in Mexico City in October.
All right. Yeah.
But before that, they ran one in 2019, and then they basically run, it looks like for the most part, they run one show a year in Mexico City, and it's just a house show.
Fairly well, right? Like 10,000.
I mean,
like that.
I'm sure it must have. If they're only running one a year and they're running at Arena Ciudad in Mexico City, I'm sure they're doing pretty good. But we talked about this, I think, a few weeks ago that they've only they don't really TV tape in Mexico that much. Like, one would think if they have so much popularity in Mexico that they
would be... WrestleDixies don't have a number for it. Okay.
Yeah. That they would be visiting the Mexican market more frequently than they do.
It's probably a matter of economy, too, in that you probably can't charge ticket prices that are very high in Mexico compared to the U.S. or the
UK. Yeah, but if you were running like a... If you're running a pay-per-view, say you run a pay-per-view, you could do it too, because you run a PLE. Brand it as a Mexican themed show, maybe push one of your Mexican wrestlers in the main event. Run it in Mexico City. You could sell it out. You could probably draw you could have higher ticket prices for that. It wouldn't be like in India. There's enough, I think, wealth in Mexico City to demand high ticket prices for a special event. It just seems like, I don't know, something that you would logically do, especially if you were interested in expanding into Mexico. You'd be running a little bit more, even if maybe you were taking a slight loss, and it'd be more lucrative to run in the United States.
And by the way, along these lines, in Latin America, I believe I saw it. Someone said that on the Masked Man podcast, they said that they expect there to be a big W show in Puerto Rico involving Bad Bunny, who is from Puerto Rico. And that
can align make business sense. Yeah.
Yeah. And that would align with something that, Triple H said on that Survivor Series press conference, where he said he very much dropped a hint about Puerto Rico.
Well, someone asked a question about future events in Latin America.
Yeah. And in that response, he was like, he said something in effect to just wait on Puerto Rico, as if, you know, there's news coming up.
Yeah. And when Triple H says, just wait, you'll see 100% something happens all the time. Yeah.
Let it play out.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Anything more to add on this?
I don't think so. I can't remember the slides. They talked about running a possibly stadium shows in Australia. Do you have a slide queued up for that? We can just put it in this section here. I think Australia is going to be the next big stadium show, it seems like. And I think a hint of that might be that they've announced a star cast in Australia for 2023. So
what was Conrad Thompson and Nick Aldis?
Mickey James,
and
James
are starting a company, a wrestling event company.
Yeah.
Is that right?
To do like a StarCast type event, at least one event in Australia next year. And I feel like that's going to be tied
to a major WWE event.
That would be my prediction. I have no insight.
What is the date on their
They
event?
Didn't give a date.
They didn't give
so a date. So that's why I think it's going to be tied to when waiting for WWE to announce that. But it seems like we'll get a big PLE in Australia, just like we did with Clash of the Castle.
Okay. Well, we've gotten the Melbourne Cricket Grounds show, or the Melbourne Stadium show, whatever they did in, was that 2019? Super Showdown?
18? Yep, Super Showdown.
2018? Yeah,
I think. 2018. Yeah, I mean, with these big stadium shows, I think like what WWE is going to be looking for is either a market that they can try, they can have very high ticket prices, like they did for the Cardiff show, and they could presumably do in Australia, or a government that's willing to pay for the show, or in some cases, both. Like they'll get a pretty good deal from like the tourist board, which I think was what happened with the first Melbourne show, was they got a very friendly deal from this, like the city of Melbourne or the state of Australia.
They,
where Melbourne
they even
is.
Reported in their, they reported something extra in their other live events line.
Yeah. That and I think the Cardiff one was, the Cardiff one, I think, was somewhat similar in that sense. And they were able to try high ticket prices, or they're looking for something like the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia show where, you know, the government can pay them a huge amount of money to come and they don't have to worry about drawing tickets. That's where I see like the future of these international stadium shows. I'd be really skeptical of seeing one in a country like India, where the government's unlikely to purchase one and doesn't
they're doing
have the
a live event. PW Insider reported that they're doing a live event, I believe, in January in India. I don't think it's nothing massive like we're talking about here, like potential stadium event in Australia, but they're doing a live event.
In last time they went to India, I believe they were supposed to have two shows in New Delhi, India, and they I think cut one of the shows and made it just
this
into
is
one.
2017, and they and Jinder Mahal lost the title.
This is the famous Jinder Mahal Triple H match where Jinder Mahal lost to Triple H. Because the crowd wanted to see Triple H win, not Jinder Mahal.
And they took the title off of him just before going to India.
Yeah,
so they,
So when it comes to like India, like drawing a crowd in India and making that a profitable endeavor for them, I think is quite difficult. The travel costs, I'm sure, are immense relative to a domestic show, and your gate is probably going to be lower. Maybe if you're only running one show, you know, every few years, you can charge a really big gate. But that's one of those things I just don't see happening unless they, it's a paid for show like the Saudi Arabia shows are. The Saudi Arabia shows are deemed a success. If they're deemed as successful as the Saudi Arabian government seems to suggest, how come we don't see more of those shows happening?
More Saudi shows?
No, not Saudi shows, but how, but like, what about, you know, what about Qatar? What about the UAE? What about Kuwait? What about these other countries that would like to also sports wash some of the things they're doing with WWE? Does Saudi Arabia?
Qatar maybe just was saving up for the World Cup. I don't know.
Do you think, well, now they have a bunch of stadiums and they're willing to spend a lot more money than probably it would cost to have WWE show up?
I would think that Saudi Arabia just has a larger budget for these things. I mean, somebody else who knows more about what's happening with sports in that region could probably tell us. But my guess would be that Saudi Arabia is just doing a greater variety of
sports. Well, these other countries are involved in sports washing, whatever you want to call it. Obviously, Qatar has the World Cup. The UAE owns Manchester City and other sports enterprises. These are countries that have no problem spending billions of dollars on sports acquisitions. It would seem that if we look at, if the WWE shows are successful for the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, why? I wouldn't surprise me, at least, if we saw some of these other wealthy oil states that are looking to change their image.
There's a cost to WWE of doing this. Like, we have to keep in mind, like, the money that Saudi Arabia, the government, is paying WWE is extreme. It's $50 million. So, like, three WrestleManias in terms of ticket sales.
Right.
And so the money has to be extreme if they're going to do this again, you know, in another country. And do they want to pay that extreme price maybe as part of the hurdle?
I don't know. I see these other countries spending $50 million like it's nothing. So I don't think it's unique to Saudi Arabia's resources, at least, that like the UAE or Qatar would be uninterested in doing it. I mean,
would Saudi Arabia want that though? Like Saudi Arabia.
Well, that's another question. Does Saudi Arabia have some sort of exclusive agreement that WWE can't take the same deal for to run a show in Dubai and to run a show in Doha or Kuwait City or these other places?
Yeah, I'm underestimating MBS really. Yeah, he's more savvy than I give him credit for. Okay. I guess we'll move to, this is all part of the same subject, believe it or not. But briefly on WWE stock. WWE stock is up to $80.50 at the close of the market on Friday. In aftermarket trading, it is up an additional 4%, up to $83.80, almost $84. We have to go back to somewhere in May of 2019 to find a W share price, at least on the close of the market, that was as high as $84. So the W stock price is just really climbing as we get closer and closer to the time when WWE next year sometime will renew their live U.S. rights. And this is, we'll look at the various price targets that equity analysts have put out. Somebody is as low as $52. I think that's Stephen Cahill of Wells Fargo. And somebody else is as high as $11, which I think is, do we have it on here? I think it's the next slide, in fact. That is Wolf Research, who just put out that price target. But the middle, the average price target is $84.50, which is where it's at in aftermarket. So we'll go to Nick Khan's comments on the Wells Fargo talk, where he talks about how these deals are, I guess, are going to be argued, which is something that I've been really curious about. Like, we hear a lot of posturing and talking about how great everything is, both in terms of WWE and AEW, but what really is the logic? What really is the argument for why these TV shows should get a strong upgrade in TV rights fees? So there's some exploration of this from Nick Khan, both directed towards the deal with NBCU for Raw and towards the deal with Fox for SmackDown. So here's first his comments on the NBCU relationship.
NBCU Monday Night Raw right now is on USA, 8 p.m. Eastern to 11 p.m. Eastern, obviously on Mondays, Monday Night Raw. If you look at the subscriber rate for USA right now, if it's hovering around 80 cents a home, we're the highest rated program on USA times three. So to us, obviously, it's a dual revenue stream, as everyone knows, in cable. So it's not just about ad revenue. It's about the relevancy of eyeballs brought to that network by WWE. We had an unintentional test at the beginning of this year. Under the Winter Olympics from Beijing, USA on short notice had struck some new MVPD deals, NBCU had, that is, which required the Olympics to air live, again, from China in primetime U.S. So we were preempted on USA with short notice, 2 weeks of Raw. We moved over to Sci-Fi Network, another NBCU property, as everybody knows. Sci-Fi is not ESPN in its heyday. It's a little lesser known. It doesn't have a dedicated audience. On short notice, 90% of our audience traveled for Monday Night Raw. And again, this was up against the Olympics. And I get it. The Winter Olympics may not be what they once were, but they still rated and they certainly still had some relevancy. So we were happy to see that. Other buyers out there were happy to see that. I think NBC was happy to see that. So in terms of USA and us, and certainly Peacock, I think the NBCU folks would tell you that we've over-delivered there in terms of paid subs. So remove the Cox homes, remove the Comcast homes where you can get Peacock for free. In terms of paid subs who have gone there for WWE, it's far exceeded their expectations and candidly exceeded some of our expectations about where it would go. So you look at the NBCU ecosystem, keep in mind NBC Sports Network went away. There's a bit of a consolidation. Other basic cable networks will fall off. Not USA. They need it to stay robust. They need to increase that 80 cents per month per sub fee because there's obviously fewer subs in the world that we're all living in.
So what he's talking about there is part of what he's talking about. He said a lot there. But where... So it's a quiz opportunity, you know that. Chris Gull, where does, say, USA Network get the majority of their revenue from?
That would be subscriptions from cable companies.
Well done. So we have some slides to look at here. So let's look at NBC first. And I went through. People should know and appreciate all the work that goes into this podcast. I did go through Comcast SEC filings last night and Fox, and I started to go through WBD, and it was quite a process. But we do have NBC and Fox here, so it's about 50-50, I guess. And this is media, so some of this is going to include the NBC broadcast money too. But across the entire NBC Universal media segment, is what they report as deeply as they report, and so this segment consists primarily of NBC Universal's television and streaming platforms, including national, regional, international cable networks, the NBC and Telemundo pod broadcast networks. NBC and Telemundo are owned via, and this includes Peacock. So anyway, I would think the cable would skew even more towards what would be in the blue here, distribution. Subscriber fees, which Nick Khan says for USA Network, 80 cents per subscriber, which is per home. So that's hundreds of millions of dollars per year, and probably a bigger piece than the ad revenue that they're making. So that's the justification that, well, how do they make that money? People are watching and using USA Network because of the programming that's on it. What's the number one show on USA Network? He says it's Raw. Basically, there's some truthiness to that. So I went through the Showbiz data, which is not everything, but it's the top daily 150 programs as ranked by P18 to 49. And I did this for January 1st to December 1st. And I calculated the watch time, which I think is the right way to look at this, rather than just what's the average rating. If you do the average rating, Raw does have the highest P18 to 49 rating of anything they might call a program. It's complicated because not every show has the same telecast name that groups easily. I did some manual grouping here when it comes to things like the Premier League and the Winter Olympics and NASCAR. But in terms of watch time, there was so much Winter Olympics on the USA Network, more than twice as much watch time, or more than twice as much broadcast time went to the Winter Olympics this year than Raw. So it's maybe not surprising that the Winter Olympics are ahead in terms of total audience watch time, are ahead of Raw. In terms of P18 to 49 watch time, Raw is a little bit ahead of the Winter Olympics, despite having less than half of the minutes of broadcast time. Is everybody following me here? Anyway, Raw is ahead of NASCAR. Raw is ahead of Premier League. And number five on this list is NXT, with over 3 billion, nearly 4 billion minutes of watch time this year to date. And even if we go further down the list, we can find additional WWE content, including, I believe it's the 8 episodes or so of WWE Evil. The Miz and Mrs. is on here in the top 20, providing an additional 170 minutes of watch time, 170 million minutes of watch time. So all this goes together, I think. I think it's quite likely that the NXT deal is going to expire at the same time as the Raw deal, and this is probably going to be dealt together. Does NXT stay on linear is a question. Maybe that ends up on Peacock. Who knows? So all this, I think, goes together. And you could say yes, especially in most years, you're not going to have the Olympics, right? Olympics, the Winter Olympics anyway, only happens every 4 years. Are the Summer Olympics going to end up on USA Network? Maybe, because there's no more NBC Sports Network.
Yeah, so NBC has the rights to the Summer Olympics, so one would imagine that.
So maybe every other year there will be.
Yeah, and there's probably going to be more Summer Olympics on USA than Winter Olympics, I would think, just because there's more sports in the Summer Olympics.
Yeah, so more events,
Yeah, there'd be more stuff to cover. Maybe it evens out to about the same, but I would suggest that. But yeah, I don't know. I'm really surprised that there's more NASCAR minutes for the year than.
So this is everything. This is the qualifying,
pre-game, post-race qualifying,
everything that had NASCAR in its telecast.
Yeah, that's really surprising to me, because NASCAR only has half of the. I mean, NBCU only has half of the NASCAR slate. A lot of those races are also on NBC proper. So even if you factor in like the truck races and the Xfinity series, like kind of like AA and AAA versions of NASCAR that run the same weekend, I'm really surprised WWE has, you know, well, I guess we're just Raw. This is just Raw, not NXT. So we're just talking about 3 hours a week.
So, I mean, they're long races, yeah.
I know they're long races, but I'm surprised by that. But obviously, yeah,
if you combine NXT and Raw, you get to, I don't know, probably something well over, probably even 14, because that's 5-8 plus 8-3 anyway. So I think it's pretty fair to, I don't know if by three times, I don't know what the thing is, what the next thing is that he's got in mind that is just behind WWE in terms of WWE being three times the lead, you know, the number two of programs on USA Network. But he's clearly justifying there, arguing that our value to USA Network is not just the ad revenue that is directly generated against our programming, but the subscriber revenue as well. So we'll get into a way that might be calculated, but we'll listen to his comments on the Fox relationship for SmackDown now.
In terms of Fox on broadcast, outside of the retrans, which we have little or nothing to do with, it's a single revenue stream. So on Fox, if you take a look at what's going on over there, they had their highest, their most expensive scripted program of all time, Monarch, which did not do particularly well. Came out a couple of months ago, did not do particularly well. There was an executive change on the entertainment side. The new head of entertainment comes from an unscripted background. So what does that tell us about Fox? They want more live. We all saw their Big Ten deal, which was announced a couple of months ago. And they want more unscripted content, think Masked Singer rather than Monarch. So in programming six nights a week, which Fox is currently doing, if you also look at their Sunday nights, yes, it's The Simpsons. The show's been on since I was a child, which, as you can see in your eyeball test, was a long time ago. So the show's been on forever, but it's not Fox's show anymore. So to showcase scripted content that's being rented by another studio or from another studio, that's not the way that we see them going. So in terms of eyeballs, also on the linear broadcast network side, scripted content is no longer working in general, really on any linear broadcast free-to-air network. That's really migrated to streaming. So everybody has six or seven nights of the week, depending on what network you are, where they need to program, while also feeding their streaming service. So if you take a look at a show like Dancing with the Stars, which has been on 20-plus cycles now for ABC, that's moving exclusively to Disney+. That's another open night of the week at Disney. So we're constantly taking a look at that, not only with Fox and NBCU, but to see what the other needs are across the board. We think it's a robust marketplace.
So, shade thrown at Yellowstone, I think, there by Nick Kahn. Acknowledge Yellowstone. Acknowledge the governor. What's the governor's name?
John Dunn.
Yellowstone is the one big exception to what he's saying there, and that, you know, scripted is dead and on linear TV. I would say for the most part, that's fair. It's interesting that he volunteers, and I don't know what to make of it, that he volunteers that in terms of the retrans, he's talking about the retransmission revenue. Does anybody know what he means by retransmission revenue?
That's not second day rights. Is that different?
No. So even though Fox is available over the air, they still charge DirecTV cable companies for the right to put Fox on their system. That's and then what the charge is called a retransmission fee. And he just volunteers that he says, we just heard it, you know, apart from the retransmission, which we have little to or nothing to do with. So it's surprising to me that he would admit that or say that. And I don't really know how to take that. So anyway, Morgan Stanley, in their report this past week, did some very interesting research along these lines. So just to put out there what Morgan Stanley thinks here, they're assuming the base case for WWE's TV rights deal in the U.S. is 1.5x. Current average annual value for Raw and SmackDown combined is $470 million a year. $470 million a year. If Morgan Stanley is correct and they get a 1.5x increase, let's say for both deals, they end up at $705 million a year. Morgan Stanley has also laid out bear cases. They have also laid out a bull case. Bear case is 1.35x, where they only end up with $635 million a year. And a bull case where they double their TV rights and end up at nearly $1 billion a year just in U.S. live rights, $940 million. So notice their bear case is not even an even. It's not even a no raise. It's not even a 1.0x case. Their sort of pessimistic case is still a 35% raise. So that's I think that is worth emphasizing.
And a big part of their analysis is the argument that the expected next television contract is already baked into the stock price, in their opinion. That people, yes, that would, you know, the over $80 per share price is because people are expecting somewhere between, let's just say, 1.35 and 2 times. The current deal. So
they write in the report that they see the consensus. In essence, they're saying the consensus of stock analysts believe, I think at this point, 1.7x or something like that. So they're a little bit, their base case is a little bit lower than what they view the consensus as. Mm-hmm. And part of this report was not just this interesting research that we're going to dig into, but part of this report was to say, I believe they raised their stock price target. They did set their stock price target as 80, whereas I believe it had been a little bit lower before, and basically saying what you just said, Jesse, that a big increase is really baked into this stock price that keeps growing and growing. And we're saying, okay, we'll raise our price target, but basically to where it's at, which is $80, and saying that, you know, okay, this is where it should be right now, but no higher. So those are their cases for the US TV deal. They lay out their reasons for optimism and pessimism. So they do their reasons for optimism. Look, Fox still makes a profit on TV, on their TV business, on their broadcast TV business. Fox does give us enough granularity that we can tell that from their SEC filings. They break out cable away from the rest of the business. And we can look at that and say, yes, they're still reporting a positive EBITDA, earnings before interest and taxes and depreciation and amortization. Also a reason for optimism is that Fox is entering this cycle where they're going to have to make new deals with all of their cable and satellite carriers. And that means that they're going to get an increase in their deals. Fox and DirecTV just finalized their deal. It was about to expire, so they're avoiding that expiration time where maybe people with DirecTV, for example, wouldn't have been able to watch SmackDown or anything else on Fox. Anyway, that deal's been closed. And the fact that another reason for optimism is that, look, SmackDown is probably still a pretty good deal for Fox in terms of the viewership that it delivers. You'd probably have to spend a lot more to find a program that delivers similarly in terms of the TV ratings that it does. Yes, it's $2 million per week, per hour, $4 million per week. That's compared to what you would have to spend to deliver similar ratings. It's 0.52 in the demo, whatever it is. You'd probably have to spend perhaps a lot more to replace it. And then the reasons for pessimism. Morgan Stanley writes, against WWE in securing a bull case renewal with Fox are the following. Number one, we estimate Fox loses money when looking simply at ad sales on SmackDown relative to the rights fees under the current cost structure, let alone that of a major increase. That's number one. And number two, WWE's value to Fox's retransmission negotiations is unclear. We don't know what value they really contribute. And then number three, unlike NBC and Peacock, Fox is not using WWE today to drive a strategic, i.e. money-losing, streaming business. So Fox, we know, is not deeply invested in the streaming business. And we won't forget, yes, Golo loves his Tubi. Fox does own Tubi. That's a free ad-supported television platform, but it's not this big risk like Peacock is. So there are those three things. The ad sales don't cover the rights fees. We don't know what the retransmission value is. And there's a lack of other things that WWE content is contributing to Fox's larger business. So then Maureen Stanley lays out these three ways that you could think about what value WWE provides to Fox. And that we could have another conversation another day about doing this as an exercise applied to either Raw or Dynamite and Rampage, I think. So these three paths to make this argument, just think about it in terms of the direct money that you generate on this content, advertising only, or you could think about it in terms of the direct and the indirect. So the advertising money that you generate plus some justification about how you're helping them with retransmission fees. And then third, those two things plus some sort of synergistic effect that you're providing to somebody like Peacock, which you're not really providing to Fox. So there's that. And here's Morgan Stanley has, based on, they source someone on this and that, they have the CPM for SmackDown, which I believe is like 38 or 40 cents CPM. What does that mean? That's the cost per mile per thousand viewers. This is the charge that we charge for advertising. It comes out to something like $27,000 per ad or something like that. Anyway, when you do all that math, you get to $64 million in a year that is attributable to SmackDown. $64 million a year. Those are what the commercials are worth in a year that you see on SmackDown. That's not covered. That's a fraction of what Fox is paying WWE per year, $205 million. And they're only generating $64 million in ads. Now, if you give SmackDown a proportionate amount of retransmission value, that is the same percent. Let's take the percentage of advertising revenue that Fox generates in terms of their whole pie. What's the percentage in that pie that's SmackDown money? Okay, it's something like, I don't know, it's like 5%. Anyway, let's take that percentage and let's assume that that is the percentage of retransmission value that is attributable to SmackDown. That's an additional $51 million. We still only get to $115 million. Still, we're at just over half of what Fox is paying SmackDown in a year. Morgan Stanley writes, we would note that although retransmission fees are an important form of indirect monetization for Fox, the total pool of retrans fees is unlikely to grow at the same rate at a WWE contract step up. So Fox is renegotiating all the retrans fees of all the cable and satellite providers. It's probably going to go up, but it's probably not going to go up to the degree that live rights fees like WWE's are going to go up. So that's a less sustainable thing. As license fees increase, losses will be hard to recoup or defend if retrans fees do not keep up pace, Morgan Stanley writes. That's the story of the TV business, the pay TV business. Yes, Fox is still profitable. Their television segment, which consists of the Fox Broadcast Network, consists of the Tubi is included in here. My Network TV and some other things are included in here. But this is the profitability. This is the EBITDA. $555 million in their previous fiscal year. This year, down to $347. So I guess this is why Rich Greenfield and others are decrying that the TV business is dying. Linear TV is dying. Morgan Stanley writes, Their conclusion is that Fox is likely to be interested in renewing SmackDown, but may have a lower ceiling than other potential bidders who are willing to absorb greater losses for strategic purposes. Think NBCU with Peacock, think Amazon with Prime Video. And given the linear ratings trends broadly, is likely that the direct losses on SmackDown at Fox will increase. The losses will increase over time rather than improve. And retransmission fees are tied to pay TV customers, which will continue to decline because of cord cutting. Fox gives WWE SmackDown the broadest reach possible, though, in the U.S. Streamer and cable competitors would have to decisively outbid Fox if WWE was going to go away from Fox.
So two things. The first is, okay, what does this really mean? What this means for WWE and like the stock price is that it makes the argument that Fox is maybe not as invested in producing a competitive bid with some of the other entities to maintain SmackDown, which theoretically takes at least one prospective, you know, rights fee bidder out of going all in and getting, you know, maybe bidding twice as much.
I think they're saying Fox would be interested. It would be hard to replace them. They provide reach. So somebody, if they're going to go away from Fox, somebody like Amazon is going to really have to outbid them strongly.
Right. But the impact, the argument is that Fox not being quite as maybe desperate or as in need of the SmackDown ratings makes it so they're less likely to make a huge bid relative to maybe how high someone else wants to go. So it takes one bidder out of the equation from, like I said, maybe if people are start to get that number up to twice to for the bear case, right? Or for the bull case, to get it to be twice its current value, you would want to have a bidder like Fox really willing to go that high, and they might not be that willing. The second aspect of it, which is interesting, is the reach argument, which... Yeah. So WWE gets paid more for Raw than they do for SmackDown, just on average annual value.
Yes, not per hour, but per week.
Right.
Yes.
So Raw is more valuable currently than SmackDown. Yet if you watch WWE, it's very clear that SmackDown has become the A show and Raw has become the B show, and that the biggest stars are put on SmackDown. That's where Roman Reigns is. That's where Ronda Rousey is. That's where Brock Lesnar mainly has been appearing. That's where Bray Wyatt, when they wanted him to come back, that's where he went. Like, SmackDown is considered from a talent allocation aspect.
Where's Dominic?
Dominic is on Raw. But SmackDown, I think clearly, if you were to like look at just now, barring guys going back and forth and making special appearances and things like that, SmackDown clearly has more star power, and I think has more dedicated towards it than Raw. And that is because Fox has that reach, and it's better for WWE to be on that platform. Does WWE perhaps consider taking less money from Fox than maybe an Amazon Prime, if it's maybe not a lot less, but potentially less, for the value of that reach? And now, if you remember, if I have this correctly, Brandon, the WWE stock price before WWE debuted on Fox was going up and up and up. And a big part of that was optimism that being on Fox would be a big boon to WWE's business, and that WWE would see increases in other revenue streams, not just in television, but by being on Fox, you would see an increase in live attendance, an increase in merchandise sales, an increase in WWE Network subscribers, because it would be on, you know, it would be in the 110, 111 million homes, and being on Fox and being advertised during NFL football and things like that.
I think you're talking about when it's way up. Let me get the laser pointer out. You're talking about like when it's way up here, it goes to nearly 100 on two different occasions, just mm-hmm. after the first deal is just after the 2018 deal is done. I think that was more due to like just irrational speculation on international, which didn't turn out to be as big as they were hoping in India and in the UK. The UK, I think I've never really known how much the UK deal is worth, but I believe it's worth less than the previous deal was worth. And I think the India deal was maybe not as big of an increase. It was a doubling. But it was not as big of an increase as maybe this irrational valuation was at. But maybe some of it, I don't know. Maybe some of it was, there was definitely the argument that I do remember the argument being made that you're describing, that by God, with this reach that they have, it's going to enhance their other engagement metrics.
People who didn't know about WWE would now know about WWE, and they were having Joe Buck read a live read for the upcoming episode of SmackDown when 22 million people are watching the 4 o'clock game on Fox would make a big difference.
When you lay out this Morgan Stanley report, can an argument be made that, like, if say SmackDown doesn't go back on Fox, that an over the air network will probably never air wrestling again, because financially it just doesn't look like you know, for an NBC, a CBS, or a Fox, or an ABC to invest in a wrestling company? Because we've talked about AEW on Fox, but I don't, looking at that, I don't think it's something they would look into.
Never is a long time. And if they pass on SmackDown, I don't think it's unreasonable to think about AEW being on Fox instead. If you get
a lot cheaper,
right? Certainly Fox wouldn't have to pay nearly as much. Yeah. Even while giving AEW a large increase over what it's getting currently, $44 million, even if you like what tripled that, you're still only at somewhere over $120 million. So that's well under the $205 that you're currently paying for SmackDown. Let's assume that there's no AEW either. I still think, I don't know what the future of broadcast TV is.
Yeah.
And what function it's going to continue to serve in people's entertainment lives. So it could still fit someday. I don't know.
Would it surprise you if, you know, SmackDown is on NBC on Friday nights?
Somewhat. I think it's very much a part of the USA.
Yeah.
Tradition. And then what are they going to put on Monday? If not Raw, that provides.
No. SmackDown being on NBC. So instead of SmackDown airing on Fox on Friday nights, NBC makes a big bid. We want to talk about corporate synergy. You have everything now. You have the Peacock, deal, Raw, NXT, and now SmackDown. Why not move just SmackDown to Friday nights on NBC?
Do you want the NBC brand associated with wrestling, I guess, is the question.
Because we talked about CEO, we don't think, or chairman, he...
Brian Roberts, yeah, probably not. And I would say at that point, if you're second to that, if you're going to put SmackDown in NBCU, just buy the company then.
Right.
Why would you rent this content? If you want all of it, just buy the company then. Which is, let's say, we're getting close to the market capital, right? If you have the Raw, the SmackDown, the Peacock, that's altogether worth about $670 million. If you double that over the course and think about that, the value of that over the course of 5 years, you're getting close to $6 billion, which is the market capital of this company.
And we've discussed,
you could also use their IP in Universal Studios and maybe other ways.
Yeah, and we've discussed the value for WWE might be to have its major television properties split between two different companies. Maybe one's on streaming, maybe one's on cable, maybe one's on network television, but to keep them separate as a way to kind of reach different audiences.
Yeah, I think you make more money, you know, the grocery store makes more money from you if you buy two of the small items rather than one of the big items, you know. Mm-hmm. That's all I have. You know, if you guys have anything else, or we're going to go to Super Chats, we can.
We'll go to Super Chat here. Just a Super Chat from MJ saying, ho-ho from the North Pole, where he's busy packing supplies for all those who are naughty and nice. How about those Friday after hours pump on no volume? So you kind of talked about the WWE stock price a little bit earlier there. So,
yes. Thank you.
And that's all we have today for Super Chat. So,
yes. There's a line in the Morgan Stanley report. Right? I feel like it could have been addressed to MJ from NJ, where they say that despite the economic challenges ahead, we still are bullish on sports rights in general and WWE in particular. I'm still with Morgan Stanley. The analyst, by the way, is Ben Swinburne. In that, I still think that sports rights are going to continue to get an increase, and I still think that WWE is going to probably. I'm kind of think there's a better prediction probably at this point to predict. I don't know, 1.7x, 1.75x, something like that. But we'll see how it plays out, and I still expect AEW. Is AEW going to get a good deal? Oh my God, I don't know.
Are they going to close forever? Did you know that they did a 0.26 this week?
Yeah,
I think it's over.
Not a good rating. Not a good rating for.
They're closing in 2 years. Remember, compared to Booker T. They're closing in.
They started with the
lowest rating since almost the end of the Wednesday Night War. Lowest rating they've ever, well, normal time slot. We're not counting preemptions. I don't count preemptions here.
Right. No real notable competition. It wasn't like the World Series or the NBA Finals was against them. But I will also argue that one thing we have learned is to never react to 1 week rating pattern.
Yes. Okay. Any plugs? Anything to plug today?
Yeah, if people want to check out my podcast, The Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast, it's right here on YouTube. If you just look it up on YouTube, you can also go to my Twitter channel or my Twitter profile. You can find a link to it. We have it both in video and audio form. I had Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling podcast on this week. We talked about Triple H's first 100 days. It was technically Triple H's first 127 days, but kind of we analyzed kind of what we've noticed in WWE's programming and WWE's approach since Triple H took over from Vince McMahon in late July, and kind of some things that we've identified as differences, some things that we've identified as being the same. Went over kind of Triple H's strengths and weaknesses so far as a creative mind and as in charge of WWE. So it's about an hour and 40 minutes. I think it was a really good discussion, kind of going over what we've seen so far, what we've learned so far about Triple H's leadership, and also what we've come to expect in the next 100 days. So that's the Gentleman's Wrestling Podcast. You can, again, find that right on YouTube.
Go on.
Well, my ring announcing for the year is done. I'll be back in 2023 ring announcing at my last show on yesterday.
Have you been signed to an exclusive contract? We need an update. Can we get an update on your contract status? You don't mind?
I am still a free agent out there. Still a free agent. But hey, if we have anybody local to the Buffalo area, I will be doing a comedy show this Saturday night at the Buffalo Brewing Company at 8 o'clock. I do stand up comedy as well, and it's going to be a great show. Brandon, maybe you could use a laugh. Come on out and come out for a nice laugh.
This is a comedy podcast. That's how it should be categorized. Okay, you can subscribe to Wrestling. We had a pretty strong last couple days on Patreon, which I appreciate. If you're somebody who's gone over the edge recently and become a subscriber for WrestleNomics on Patreon, I really appreciate it. At patreon.com/WrestleNomics, you get my TV ratings reports that come out nearly every day, quarter hours when I can get them, access to the WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet. We also have reports, not just for the quarter hours, for Raw, SmackDown, NXT, Dynamite, Rampage, but also there's been ratings reports that come out, as far as I know, originally from nobody else, on Women of Wrestling, on when they don't make the show, but it's top 150, Tales from the Territories. I want to say there's something else in there too. Impact and New Japan as well, when they don't make the top 150. New Japan almost never does. One more week of Tales from the Territories. Mid-South is coming up, I think, this Tuesday. And after that, I think, is the Vince documentary, which my face might appear in. That's all. Patreon.com/WrestleNomics, best way to support. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Enjoy all your favorite sports like never before at BetMGM. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. When you register with BetMGM, you'll get instant access to a variety of parlay selection features, live betting options, and the best daily promotions in the business. And with BetMGM at your fingertips, every play and every game matters more than ever. Place your money line, prop, or parlay bets with the king of sportsbooks today. Sign up using code Buckeye and receive up to $1,500 back in bonus bets if you don't win your first bet. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. 21 plus and present in Ohio, subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards are non-withdrawable bonus bets that expire in 7 days. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER in partnership with MGM Northfield Park.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.